work on this. This is great. I love the Spirit. These past 2 weeks, I have heard my wife Sue use terms of endearment in relation to our 11-year-old puppy. Excuse me, 11, yes, 11-week-old puppy. Week. I'm just checking this out. 11-week-old puppy. She's never used these terms of endearment with me before. And I think I shall choose to be grateful rather than envious. For you see, the terms include the devil, hellion, and little terror. Now you can accurately picture Sue saying these things with a great big smile on her face and laughing all at the same time. So it occurred to me that this past week that the creator of the devil dog snack, the one that looks like an elongated whoopie pie, might have had a puppy similar to ours. Admittedly, puppies are playful and try to get away with whatever they can, just like toddlers. From our adult perspective, the playfulness might be really annoying and devilish. But from the toddler or puppy perspective, I suspect that all they want to do is have fun. So I was wondering also this week what this might look like on a cosmic level. So let's suppose for a moment that there was in fact a cosmic creator. And what if the cosmic creator wanted to play and so created its own being, in its own being, an alter ego, which could be called the devil or maybe Satan? And what if the playfulness had an ulterior objective, that is, never take oneself too seriously? Put all this together and you would have cosmic or divine playfulness. What is fascinating is that many cultures have some form of this kind of mythology. Even the Hebrew people, early in its cultural memory, had a story about Job, where God and Satan literally played together to see what kind of person Job truly was. Satan was simply part of the cosmic drama, part of the divine play. The devil, or coyote, or loci, are all cosmic tricksters, turning upside down the assumptions, judgments, and expectations of we mere mortals. All religious language is symbolic. As such, mythology, like dreams, tell us little about the cosmos, but inform us about ourselves. The trickster is an archetype, a part of who we are. Rather than ignoring, denying, or suppressing our playfulness, I would like to suggest that we elevate it by giving it the stature it deserves. I think we should consider very seriously a philosophical stance that acknowledges the significance of divine playfulness. But in fact, this idea is nothing new. Author Tom Robbins writes that the fact that playfulness, the kind of divine playfulness intended to lighten man's existential burden and promote what Joseph Campbell called the rapture of being alive, lives near the core of Zen, Taoist, Sufi, and Tantric teachings, is lost on most Westerners. Even scholars who acknowledge the playful undertone in those disciplines treat it with condescension and disrespect. In ancient Egypt, it was believed that when a person died, the person's heart would be placed on a scale by the gods. In one pan of the scales was the heart, and in the other pan was a feather. If there was imbalance, if the heart of the deceased weighed more than the feather, he or she was denied admittance to the afterworld. Only the light-hearted were deemed advanced enough to merit immortality. Divine playfulness is what the Tibetans call crazy wisdom, which may be seen as a paradox or oxymoron, but in fact suggests that for moments in our lives, we can play the archetypal role of the holy fool. And the holy fool is not without precedence in the Americas. The holy fool is noted is the trickster, that charming conniver and truth teller found in the rituals and tales of many indigenous peoples. He's known in many Native Americans as coyote, to African Americans as Brer Rabbit, and even to several generations of young Americans in a watered-down version of Bugs Bunny. Tricksters and other rebels of the mythic realm have helped oppressed people survive one invasion and calamity after another, and yet still keep their soul and spirit. To this day, it is possible to see the divine clown participate in the Kachina dances in the Hopi Indian villages in Arizona. These Kachinas symbolize, or for some of them actually are, the gods themselves come to earth in ceremony, celebration, and worship. That the jokester or trickster or clown is a Kachina and is a part of these ceremonies show the importance of the human paradox. Life is serious, but not all that serious. I also see the holy fool or trickster in such people as Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, both of whom, through humor, attempt to promote sanity in a country that has, in so many ways, become dysfunctional. Indeed, with this country's heart, if put on the Egyptian scale, be lighthearted. We tend to be reactive, polarized, violent, and distrustful as a nation, but I don't think we're lighthearted. According to the World Database of Happiness, the United States is rated number 20 on the happiness scale, with Canada being number 5 and Mexico being number 7. I think it is time to make fun of all the silliness and seriousness that occurs in our lives and in our politics. It is time for Unitarian Universalists to become divine fools and promote crazy wisdom.
Amen.
Where's the usher when we need him? Crazy wisdom is, of course, the opposite of conventional wisdom. It is wisdom that deliberately swims against the current in order to avoid being swept along in the numbing wake of apathy, cultural helplessness, and systemic despair. Wisdom is that flouts taboos in order to undermine their power. Wisdom that evolves when one, while refusing to avert one's gaze from the sorrows and injustices of the world, insists on joy in spite of everything. It is wisdom that embraces risk and security. Wisdom that turns the tables on neuroses by lampooning it. It is wisdom. Wisdom that is needed for those who neither seek authority nor willingly submit to it. There are 3 major objectives to promoting crazy wisdom and divine playfulness. The first is to reduce our own narcissism. Norman Holland, in his work Laughing, A Psychology of Humor, concludes that people who are too self-important to laugh at their own frequently ridiculous behavior have a vested interest in gravity because it supports their illusions of grandiosity. These illusions are perpetuated often through the conspicuous consumption of goods and possessions and through the rigid, unquestioning allegiance to a particular religious or political affiliation. Tim Robbins relates the illusions of grandiosity to despair. He says, ironically, it's the same malignant narcissism revealing itself through arrogance, avarice, severity, defensive cynicism, and aggressive ambition that is keeping the vainglorious out of their paradise. Among our egocentric sad sacks, despair is as addictive as heroin and more popular than sex, for the single reason that when one is unhappy, one gets to pay a lot of attention to oneself. But for those willing to reduce their ego, to laugh it into submission, heaven on earth is a distinct psychological possibility. The second objective of divine playfulness is to find new creative forms, tactics, and strategies for social activism and reform. The causes of justice, ecology, peace, common decency clearly need our continued support. Activists, dreamers, citizens alike need to reawaken the divine fool within themselves, this universal archetype, the shamanic rascal who is capable of juggling realities and transforming fantasy into something powerful. This coyote spirit can help guide us in many ways by mixing up all the rigid assumptions, by instilling in us the hope of an underdog, or simply by making us laugh when we need it most. Here are a few wholly foolish ideas that Bradford Ken Keeney, a psychologist, has come up with. One, once a week, choose a heavily advertised product you already have in your home that is not essential to your existence. Move it to a spot where it looks completely out of place. For instance, you could put your hair dryer inside the refrigerator or hang a box of junk food over the fireplace. Think about how easy it could be to part with these consumerist items by recognizing their real lack of value. Two, write to your local library or literature teacher to ask which books are most likely to get banned if we end up with more narrow-minded Supreme Court justices. And then publish this endangered reading list in your local newspaper. Three, encourage local musicians and composers to write songs that pay tribute to the way local industries have polluted the environment. Send a tape of the songs to every public school teacher in the area. And four, organize a fundraising campaign to annually appoint and support a local trickster. Teenagers and senior citizens might be particularly suited for the job. If we think that some of this is actually way out, let me mention a couple of articles I actually found. One states that in 1995, British Airways appointed one of its employees to become the company's official corporate jester. The employee, Paul Birch, came up with the idea because he thought that the modern board of directors acted much like a medieval court where no one could question the king or senior courtiers. Because, he said, they have become far too important for anybody to challenge. As long as they can't possibly be wrong, they can continue doing the wrong things all the time and never know it. Much like the court jester in medieval times, the corporate jester can counteract conformity and question management without fear of repercussions. Would that be phenomenal? Interestingly, this was the role of the prophet when ancient Israel had kings. Unfortunately, most of the prophets surrounding the king were mere yes men. Another article told of a protest in Santa Cruz a few years ago by clowns. Apparently, they felt that the fortunes of clowndom had turned downward and wished to express their frustration at a world that seemed unwelcome to clowns. So 80 clowns with bulbous noses, wigs, and oversized pants marched down Pacific Avenue in what they called the Million Clown March, chanting in front of the Gap clothing store, "Our clothes are better than yours." Chanting in front of Starbucks, "Double mocha lattes." And chanting soon after, No more chanting. At the end of the protest, the 80 clowns of the Million Clown March piled into 3 very small cars. The third objective of the divine playfulness is to promote spiritual transformation. We are enmeshed in idol worship, whether it be focused on sports or politics, the nation state, materialism, consumerism, war, drugs, narcissism, terror, fear. We have the ability to transcend idolatry, to be simply human, to see the world as it truly is, to acknowledge the divine in each and every single person. Divine playfulness or crazy wisdom is, in essence, about tripping ourselves into seeing, hearing, and feeling the world with a different awareness. It offers everyone the chance to have accidents of enlightenment, transformation, and wonder. Crazy wisdom lets us tune into the sounds of unknown prophets who dare us to love our enemies, take care of the planet, and dance wildly in the streets. I like the fact that our puppy is a devil dog. She reminds me that this world can be transformed. She reminds me that divine playfulness is part of our ministry. May it be so. Blessed be. And amen.
Amen.